Good evening, friends. Welcome to Valley Writers Read, a program where we get to hear only San Joaquin Valley writers read their stories. And we have a really great author with an exceptionally fine story for you tonight. She comes to us from Tehachapi, and her name is Valerie Schulz. We've enjoyed her great writing for many years. Tonight, she entitles her story, The Rufus Gene. Here she is, Valerie Schulz reading, The Rufus Gene.
The Rufus Gene. Jimmy meets us at the front door, like he's been watching. He is a kid balloon, about to pow with his announcement. Puppies, he says, lisping his S. Dallas and I are coming off the late bus, the high school bus. Jimmy's in fifth grade, and his bus gets home an hour earlier. Jimmy is pretty much on his own until we get home, ever since our mom started at the Save-A-Lot. Now that we're home, we're in charge of him, and we don't know what he's talking about. Come see, Jimmy bugs us. We dump off our books, my books, since Dallas never brings any home. Dallas is a senior, a year ahead of me, and he says he's only getting the piece of paper for Mom, since musicians don't need diplomas. Like Dallas and Rick Grasso wailing their guitars and spacing out in Rick Grasso's garage are ever going to get paid to wail and space out. Dallas says it could happen, ignoring the fact that they're no good. I'm not crazy, though. I'm sensible. I've got, as my stepdad says, a good head on my shoulders, which is his nice way of saying I'm not pretty. I know what matters. I'm lucky because grades come easy for me, as long as I do the work, jump through the hoops, use good grammar. I'm angling for a full scholarship after next year, to the college of my choice. I have pretty good underprivileged credentials, besides being a woman. I'm thinking career, salary, real world, none of Dallas's lame dreams of fame. I want benefits. I want security. I want a purpose. Actually, I'm thinking about being a vet. I have a good memory, I like animals, and guts don't bother me. Come on, you guys, out back! Jimmy pulls my hand. Dallas is drinking out of the milk carton, one more thing for Jimmy to tell when he needs ammunition. Dallas is also holding the refrigerator door open. I grab a few Oreos. Well, our mom buys imitation Save-A-Lot cream sandwich cookies from the open package on the counter. Okay, I say, show me the puppies. We go out the back door, past the perfect lawn and rose bushes, through the gate to the hidden part of the yard. This is where the gardening tools and trash cans are stored, and where we put up a tire swing for Jimmy, and where we keep our dog, Rufus, and our real stuff. This part of the yard is more comfortable. It's normal. The dirt rises up in a gritty dust to stick along your hairline and under your fingernails. The two old eucalyptus trees have been let be, to grow and wander however they want. The other yards, front and back, are for show. They look like the birthday cakes in the glass case at the Save-A-Lot, perfect but sort of funny-colored, fakey. And with a built-in warning, don't touch, don't mess anything up. Jimmy leads me to a gap in the boards of the far fence where we can see into the back neighbor's yard. We hear some rustling, and I line my eye up to the long, thin peephole to get a look at Jimmy's discovery. Bingo, puppies. The mother dog senses us and shifts her position to red alert. The puppies start to whining and whimpering. They want their warmth, their ready milk. The mother dog is huge and fluffy, a stuffed white pillow of a dog. She has midnight dark eyes and a sweet face. She is a Samoyed and magnificent. I've been working on my dog breeds. Dogs are much easier than horses. Dogs, at least, I've been around a lot. The puppies, though, are brown and black, wiry, with curly tails, the exact opposite of their mother. She loves them anyway. I count 7 of them, damp little rats with pushed-in faces, like they haven't finished forming. "Where's Rufus?" I asked Jimmy. All of a sudden, I noticed that he is not around. "I know, they look like Rufus," says Jimmy happily, like this is good. This has happened before. Wherever we have lived, pretty soon all the puppies born in the neighborhood look like Rufus. Rufus is a real lady's dog, though you wouldn't know it to look at him. He is skinny and forgettable, with a scruffy beard and a curly stump of a tail, and a coat of many dull colors. He has some Airedale, I would say, but who knows what else. Rufus is not a normal dog. For one thing, he lies down in any fight. He immediately and totally cries uncle, so the other male dogs get disgusted with him and let him go his way. They think he lacks honor, but he's crafty. This trick has saved his skin many times. And it gives him free run of the neighborhood. Rufus's main talent, other than his obvious way with the females in heat, is his ability to escape. He can break out of any yard, slip through any fence, get past any guard. Rufus is the Houdini of dogs. And judging by those puppies, it looks like he has done it again. We are supposed to keep him penned up back here so he doesn't pee on some exotic plant or poop in nasty piles on the lawn. I think we are in for it. Because this time, in this place, it's different. This time, we're going to have to get him fixed for sure. The Rufus gene is too strong. It's insanely predominant. It's likely to drown all the others in the pool. And this is an upscale pool. This neighborhood, for us, is a whole new ballgame. This neighborhood is not really for us. It's for well-to-do people. Well-to-do is what rich people call themselves, but you wonder, well-to-do what? My stepdad got us here. The house we're living in belongs to some old boss of his who had to move back east. When the boss couldn't sell the house, he rented it to my stepdad on the condition that if it sells, we're out of here. For cheap rent, we have to show the house to any potential buyers, so far nobody. We have to keep everything presentable and in working order. In return for this arrangement, we get benefits. Dallas and Jimmy and I get to go to rich schools with labs and swimming pools and choir robes, with VCRs in every classroom and choices on the lunch menu. My mom has gotten a job in a bright, safe supermarket instead of the crappy convenience store where she even got held up once. Even my stepdad is holding a job at a well-to-do nursery full of la-di-da shrubbery and huge birds of paradise and dwarf cacti. My stepdad has a green thumb, even if he has a gray personality. He may be drab and uningenious, not high on the IQ scale, but you've got to hand it to him. The yard looks like a postcard from spring. You could say we are upwardly mobile, that we have gotten our break. I hate to think what will happen if this house does sell. Please, let the market stay lousy until I graduate. Dallas joins us and takes a turn spying on the puppies through the fence. "Oh, man," he groans. "I know," I say. "Rufus nailed another one," he says. "They look like Rufus," Jimmy repeats fondly. Jimmy is our half-brother, the actual son of our stepdad, and at times like this, it shows. "Where is Rufus?" I ask again. Dallas points. "Right there." All this time we have been admiring his offspring, Rufus has been lounging in a shady corner of the yard. Now, with his name coming up everywhere, he listens. Then he yawns and stretches. He looks at us, then turns inward and checks his manhood. For such a skinny dog, Rufus has massive black testicles, and he spends most of his downtime snuffling around in them. I think the sound of Rufus indulging himself is the main reason my mom won't let him in the house. He is totally housebroken and never chews anything, but she can't stand that sound. Those jewels are the outward sign of Rufus's dominant genes. I hate to think of them shriveled and non-functioning, joyless. I know how they fix dogs. Finished for the time being with his male fixation, Rufus saunters over to us, checks us for food, and then stares without expression at the fence. If he feels any pride in fatherhood, he is good at hiding it.
"Let's go see if we can pet them. Pet the puppies," Jimmy suggests enthusiastically.
Dallas and I look at each other. We understand the risk. We don't know the neighbor and figure we may be better off that way. But Jimmy insists, and we can't let him go alone, so I make Dallas come with us. I can, because I have a lot on him. We walk around by the street to the neighbor's front door, which is actually on the next shady street up. We knock on the door. Dallas hangs way back. No answer. We ring the bell. A real pretty girl, as pretty as candy, opens the door. This gets Dallas to step up a little. She is around my height, but perfectly and pinkly formed, like a breathing cheerleader Barbie, only with normal-length legs. "Yes," she says, like she has been taught. She looks at Jimmy and me, then concentrates on Dallas, like all girls do. Even if he is my brother and makes me sick sometimes, I know Dallas is a babe. What I inherited in brains, he got in the looks department. Dallas could probably be a model. He has great bones and no freckles. His cowlick makes his hair fall just right, and he was born to wear faded denim. On top of everything else, it matches his eyes. I figure Dallas has already gotten us into this house.
"We came to see the puppies," Jimmy pipes.
"We live right behind you," I explain, way too fast, "and Jimmy here saw the puppies through the fence. I mean, he wasn't spying or anything, and we thought,
"I know," the girl says, flirting with Dallas. "I've seen you over there. Let me go get my mother."
"Don't go away," she says to Dallas. She swings her hair so it turns before the rest of her. We wait on the front step. There is a jade plant bursting from a shiny green pot next to the door, and the house numbers are on painted tiles, 12280, with curls and flowers, very stylish. The front has been given a lot of thought. It makes me nervous. The woman of the house comes to the door. She has also been given a lot of thought and also makes me nervous. She seems like her lipstick and earrings and scarf will always match, no matter what, even if she is just hanging around reading women's magazines all day.
"You live back there?" she asks us, pointing accusingly.
"Can we see the puppies?"
Jimmy asks her.
"You can see the puppies," the woman assures him grimly. "In fact, you can have the puppies, and you can give me my $150 stud fee in return." I can see her frustration cresting like a Pacific wave, and it's about to rush and foam all over us. The daughter has made herself scarce.
"I'm going back home," Dallas says, and he is gone before I can say anything. The woman is already talking at us again. Jimmy is not getting it, although by now he senses her anger and nudges close to me. "My missy is a pure Samoyed," she is saying. "She has papers. I paid a stud fee to the owner of another pure Samoyed who also has papers. I have buyers lined up for at least 5 purebred Samoyed puppies with papers at $350 a head, and your dog..." She steps forward menacingly, a sitcom mom gone berserk. "Your mangy dog dug a hole or climbed the fence or whatever he did and got there first. Those puppies are worthless.
their mutts. Go see them, because the minute they're weaned, they're yours.
The woman motions us to the side gate, lowers her voice. Go in that way, she says. Stay on the path, please. We go through the gate into a backyard paradise much more fabulously landscaped than ours. Ours is for beginners compared to this one. My stepdad should see this. It even has a little fish pond with a waterfall, and I'm surprised that Missy doesn't eat the flitting orange fishes. But then, she is a purebred with papers. Missy is behind a hedge way at the back part of the yard, against the fence that is the back side of our fence, and I check to see if Dallas is spying on us from our yard. He isn't. Missy is in a big cardboard box with an old pink blanket and layers of newspaper and some faded beach towels. The puppies are nursing, which delights Jimmy. Missy watches us as we walk closer. I tell Jimmy to go slow and not to touch the puppies until Missy knows we are okay, because she is a very big dog with impressive teeth and a powerful maternal urge. Missy realizes, though, that we are friends. She lets us stroke the puppies, and after a few minutes, she even leaves the box to wolf the dog chow from her food bowl while we mind her young. The puppies have that wet newspaper pee and poop smell, but we get used to it. They have teeth like needles as they swarm over to us, looking for something to chomp or suckle. They all have Rufus's tail and coloring. Not a one is fluffy or white. Two have already sprouted Rufus beards. I smile. I feel wicked, picturing the woman's horror at these puppies popping from Missy's expensive womb.
Like little Rufuses, Jimmy squeals.
Missy comes back, tanked up on nourishment, and we give the puppies back to her. Missy licks them, fusses over them, cleans them. She is an excellent mom. You should be proud, I tell her. I see the pride in her eyes, but also the humiliation behind it, that some strange fancy dog had been forced on her to impregnate her for money, while all along she had chosen Rufus. But maybe it's just because we're reading Romeo and Juliet in literature class. Rufus is an upstanding guy, in his way, I tell her. As we let ourselves out through the gate under the eye of the woman, she says, in a few weeks, they're yours. Tell your parents. The woman presses her lips together, wrinkling her lipstick into spidery lines. Maybe you can try again, next heat, I say. Humph, she says, a lot you know. Missy is ruined forever by this. She can't be bred after a mixed litter. All that money. Now she's just any trampy dog. I file this under new information. But I can see the woman is genuinely saddened by this, so I bow my head respectfully and latch the gate with lavish care. Then Jimmy and I run home as fast as we can.
What's stud fee? Asked Jimmy.
It sounds funny with a lisp. We are setting the dinner table. My mother is just home from work and trying to figure out how to microwave potatoes instead of baking them. We've never had a microwave, and she's afraid that instead of saving time, the potatoes will explode like starchy hand grenades and destroy the inside of the built-in microwave oven. Aunt Louise cracks up. Where did you hear that? She asks Jimmy. Aunt Louise has that smoker's laugh, where she laughs so low and funny that you start laughing with her, but then she laughs too hard and it turns into a cough and you think she might die, and then you feel bad for laughing when someone is at death's door. Aunt Louise is my mother's sister, come for dinner. It is sort of an early birthday dinner for me, because my actual birthday is on Easter this year, and my mother thought it might get confusing. She might put candles on jelly beans or something. She is unnerved that I want baked potatoes for the main course for my birthday meal because I have stopped eating meat. It doesn't seem right to me to keep eating animals if I am thinking of being a vet to help them. But it doesn't seem right to her to fix a celebration meal without meat. She says it makes us look poor, especially in light of the fact that she has allowed me to invite my boyfriend to my birthday dinner. This unnerves her, too, that I have a boyfriend and that he's well-to-do. Or his family is. My mother thinks he's from a better class, a better background than we are. But I know he's the same as other boys and wants the same thing every other boy wants, which is to have sex often and whenever he wants. Deep down, my mother knows this about boys. They only think about sex. She learned it the hard way. Dallas and I are proof of our mom's lessons in the school of hard knocks or hard knock-ups. But my mom and I don't talk about this. We only talked about periods and breasts, the girl half of girl talk. I only got my period last year after waiting and wanting it so badly. After one period, when I saw what it was like, I wanted it to stop. I didn't realize how lucky I was to get it so late. And breasts, mine only plumped up pretty recently. I got breasts that actually made hills through my shirt and my boyfriend at about the same time. Don't tell me there's no connection. I'm smart, though. I don't want to have a baby at 18 and another one at 19 like my mom did, and I don't want to get AIDS, so I hold out the prize. I tell my boyfriend that all the way is against my religion, but really, even though I like him a lot, I don't want to give up my whole life just to make him happy for 10 minutes, or however long sex takes. I only let him get so crazy with me. No fluids. My boyfriend's probably already been as many places as Rufus, and I guess I looked like an easy mark. New at school, lonely, my clothes not it, all that needy stuff. The funny thing is, I really could love him forever. I wish I could believe he would really love me after I gave him his 10 minutes. But right now, he just thinks I'm a challenge. I fold Save-A-Lot birthday napkins so the stupid balloons don't show, and Jimmy plunks a fork on each one. Since we are having guests, he has to give himself the Batman fork. Stud fee means they wanted the daddy of the puppies to be all white, like the mommy, I tell Jimmy. Just like our folks, mutters Dallas. Dallas is dating a Mexican girl, Dina, and has pointedly not been allowed to invite her to dinner. So many things freak our mom and stepdad out. For them, dating someone Mexican is a federal case. Dina's just a girl with gorgeous, shiny black hair and not even the remote possibility of a freckle. It must be fantastic. And she's smart. She's making Dallas wait for it, too, he told me. No one's ever done that to Dallas before. They should welcome Dina to the family with open arms. They should bless her. They wanted white puppies, not Rufus puppies, I say. That they could sell for a lot of money, my mom says. She is worried that the neighbor will sue us for the stud fee, anticipating all sorts of unpleasantness. She is not looking forward to trying to farm out 7 puppies, and she says under no circumstances are we keeping one. First thing tomorrow, she says, she is getting Rufus an appointment to go under the knife. We can't let this happen again, not in this neighborhood, she says. She wants this neighborhood bad, I know. She wants us to fit. Even if we aren't well-to-do, she wants us to fake it. She made us stop calling Jimmy Jimbo when we moved here because she said it made us sound like white trash. She bought my stepdad one of those knit shirts with only 3 buttons and a tiny horse logo on it, but she doesn't make him wear it on account of how pathetic he looks in it. She wants Dallas to get his diploma and stop playing his guitar and loafing in Rick Grasso's garage. She wants him to learn a trade. She wants me to make it to college before I turn up pregnant. She keeps scheming up ways for us to buy this house ourselves, as if that were possible. She wants it all. The phone rings, and Aunt Louise answers it. She has just come back in from having a smoke out by Rufus, since, of course, no smoking is allowed in our borrowed house. She hands the phone to me. It's my boyfriend. He's talking too fast. He can't come to dinner, he says. His parents won't let him. In fact, he needs to let me know that his parents are making him ask Sarah Prentice to the prom. Sarah Prentice is in my American history class. She gets C's if she's lucky. She is also a girl with down-to-the-butt blonde hair and a perfect tan, even in winter. What mean parents he must have to make him ask her out. He explains he wants to be fair. He is thinking of me. He is so concerned about me that he's breaking up with me. I hear his stupid robot voice say all this. Then I hang up. Can't he come, my mom asks. Ask Sarah Prentice, I think to myself. I practice what I will write in my diary tonight. For my 17th birthday, I got a sweater and a nice potato dinner, and I got dumped. To my enormous embarrassment, I start crying. I can't help it. Well, that's too bad, my mom says, but there'll be other dinners. No, there won't, I choke out. He broke up with me. On your birthday? My mom asks. The microwave full of potatoes is beeping at her, distracting her. I wonder if she has forgotten that is not actually my real birthday for 5 more days. Oh, honey, says Aunt Louise. She hugs me like there's no tomorrow. She smooths my hair. Men are jerks. My stepdad and Dallas take their Cokes. Well, their Save-A-Lot colas and red cans with white writing to fool you. And beat it to the den. They know when to lie low. Jimmy stays with us because he doesn't yet understand his generic male guilt. He has no idea he's been accused of anything. I know you don't want to hear this right now, my mom says, but maybe it's for the best this way. This way feels sort of like a few years ago when Jimmy found the baby rabbit. Our cat had caught a big rabbit and chewed its head and front legs off. Jimmy found the poor, confused baby bunny in the scrub oak and brought it home. It just about covered the length of his 7-year-old grubby hand. Jimmy figured the headless, 2-footed dead rabbit on our step made it an orphan and made us responsible. He named it Eggie and put it in a grape box from our neighbor's trash. He gave it cut-up old lettuce and shaved carrots and a salad dressing cap full of water. He stroked its fur with one grubby finger. He talked to it, gave it a tour of the house, sang it lullabies, but it was no good. In the morning, it was dead. Probably from the nutritional deprivation of missing its mother's milk, but Jimmy said, from a broken heart. My mom said Eggie was happy now because his soul was with his headless mother's soul, with only their bodies left for us to bury. Fine for Eggie, Jimmy finally said. But where does that leave me? This way leaves me more alert. I won't get fooled again. Jimmy hands me his cola for a sip. I look at Jimmy, who looks sort of like me, and I cry more. I know he's got it. Just like me, poor guy. The Rufus gene. Not canine, but the equivalent human one. Dominant and bristly. We're not the kind of kids people take to. I see it daily in their eyes. My school guidance counselor, the neighbor woman, all the Sarah apprentices, even my ex-boyfriend. I can't deny it. My curly tail hides in my jeans, but if you look closely, you can see my beard. I don't belong here at all. I don't have papers. My real place is back through the fence, which everybody knows. I pull Jimmy's hair harder than I mean to. I think a happy thought, which is my mom's great advice. Like, wouldn't the joke be on all of them if the Rufus gene became the latest style? It could happen. Yeah, right.
That was Valerie Schulz reading The Rufus Gene. This is a story about how so many of us, and maybe even our pets, want to rise to a higher social class than the one we happen to find ourselves in. How we want to lift ourselves into something better, some place which we believe will be more desirable, live in a more fancy house, have more exclusive friends, and always continue that search for what we believe to be upward mobility. The mother in Valerie's story had two children when she was 18 and 19, later married a man who came along with another child. They moved into an exclusive neighborhood where, even though they never expected to actually own the house, that's where they lived. Well, Rufus, their mixed-breed dog, started things off by somehow getting into the neighbor's yard and fathering a bunch of puppies that looked like him, not like their neighbor's purebred Samoyed. That very much upset the Samoyed's owner. She became thoroughly distressed and wondered how such low-life people and their mongrel dog could be living next door. Other relationships didn't work out either, and in the end, it seems like the folks in their new neighborhood were telling them, their children, and Rufus to move back to wherever they came from. Friends, as we mentioned earlier, Valerie Schultz has been a steady contributor to our show for well over 15 years. Her stories are always gripping, realistic, and seem to get better and better over the years. She originally graduated from the University of Texas, has been published many times, and just recently authored a collection of short stories. She writes a column on parenting for the Bakersfield Californian. Thank you, Valerie, for that great story tonight. We hope we can count on you for more of your fiction in seasons to come. And so we come to a close of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read story again, just go online at kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, two authors, Elizabeth McMunn Tatanko and Anne Leith Biggs. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.